So the last time we covered chapter 9 there, and we saw where Israel had let the Gibeonites come in, and they obviously deceived them, but they fell for it. There was no discernment in the camp, and they allowed them to settle in. And then once they found out, obviously Joshua made a treaty with them to that they would be servants there to them. And then we're going to see Joshua's, in this chapter, we'll see Joshua's faithfulness to that treaty as well. A lot in this chapter, whether we covered or not, I'm not sure if we get all the way through, but there's just a lot of stuff here. But of course, now we'll see where the adversaries come against Israel. Chapter 10, verse 1 says, "Now it came to pass when Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had taken Ai and utterly destroyed it, as he had done to Jericho and its kings, so he had done to Ai and its kings. And now the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them, that they feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city, like one of the royal cities, and because it was a greater than Ai, and all its men were mighty. Therefore Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent for Hoham, king of Hebron, Huram, king of Jarmuth, Japhia, king of Lachish, and Debir, king of Eglon, saying, 'Come up to me and help me, that we may attack Gibeon, for it has made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel.' Therefore the kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon, gathered together and went up, they and all their armies, encamped before Gibeon and made war against them." Interesting enough, this guy, Adonai Zedek, his name means Lord of Righteousness. Lord of Righteousness. Interesting enough is that he's going to come and set his troops against Israel and Joshua. Very similar as we see as Satan, the enemy of the cross, right? And of our Lord, would set himself against Jesus as well. So here we have a picture in the Old Testament in Joshua of course Joshua being a representation of Jesus, and also this guy Adonai Zedek, really, rather than Lord of Righteousness, he should have been called the Lord of Unrighteousness. I'm not sure what that makes his name exactly, but we see him as the Antichrist in the Old Testament here. So we see the Antichrist in this chapter, and we also see Joshua, you know, Jesus. So we see even in Joshua here, we see a prophetic foretelling of the Antichrist revealed. And look what he does. He leads nations against Joshua. He leads nations against Israel, just as the Antichrist will do when he comes. There seems to be two responses to the Lord that you'll find, right? One, you'll see response of, I surrender. Right? Even in this day, right? You'll see people say, you know what? I've had enough. Lord, I surrender. Right? And we give our lives to Christ. And then there's the other side of the story. Very offensive. Don't want to, really opposes Christ. Does everything to make that known. And that's what we have here, right? We have the Gibeonites that actually came within the camp, and they saw the hand of the Lord. That's why they came in, you know. That's why they wanted to settle in their midst, because they saw the power of God in the midst of Israel. So they thought, we either go in their camp, or we're going to get destroyed. You know, they understood the power of God. So we see two camps, the Adonine, Zedek, camp, where attacks happen when fear comes about, right? It says there that they were afraid. That's why they were putting these alliances together. So there's these attacks that come out. We see that today, right? With the attacks of the enemy. Why are people so against Christianity? You know? Because they're afraid of it. They're afraid that it might change their lives. Right? And then we get the other people that are surrendering to Christ because they fear Christ. They fear God. They finally say, who am I? You know? Who am I that I should take aim at God? And they, you know, just like we were. Right? We were sinners. We are sinners. Right? Doesn't eliminate that, but it certainly, we were to a point where we were in opposition to Jesus, and we knew that. And then we saw the power of Christ. Right? It's interesting, we were talking about a cousin of Karen's the other day. I hope you don't mind me sharing this, but we were talking about a cousin of hers, and she said, yeah, you know, she keeps saying she wants to get together with Mom and me because she wants to hear about the Lord. Isn't that wild? You don't get many of them opportunities, do you? Want to hear about your faith. Because there's something different about your faith than my faith. And so you get those people that say, aha, I see the Lord. You know, I think it was Gandhi, right? That was actually witnessed to before he turned to Hinduism, right? He said the only reason why he wouldn't introduce Christ to his people was because of the Christ followers. Because they were hypocrites. They weren't living right. He saw that. And he said, why would I want to introduce Christ to them so that they can be like them? So he never did. You know, and he accepted some false religion. You know? That we would have such a presence in somebody's life that they would say, we want to hear about your faith. You know, rather than the opposite. So they were greatly afraid, and this was the reason why they were attacking. Let's face it, if the enemy has nothing to fear, why would they attack? Right? Even that goes for our lives, right? If the enemy has nothing to fear because we're lukewarm Christians, why would he? We're doing it, right? If we're the hypocrites, why would he attack us? Because we're doing it. We're destroying the faith, right? We're destroying the image of Christ to other people. Why would he doesn't have to interfere with it, right? So take courage, right? I mean, just as God would tell Joshua, you know, be of good courage. You know, you're being attacked because be of good courage because it's because you're walking the way you're walking that you're being attacked. So for us, you know, we should, I hate to say it, be glad, right, that we're attacked. But understand that if you walk with Jesus, right, if you talk with Jesus, if you give to Jesus, you're going to be attacked by the enemy. right? And understand that, because it makes, see, it makes the battle a little easier when we understand that stuff. Is it still a hard battle? Yeah, it's a hard battle. But we know that it's all because of Him that we're having these battles. Someday we won't have to have battles, right? We look forward to that. Amen. Verse 6, and the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at the camp of Gilgal, saying, do not forsake your servant. Come up to us quickly. Save us and help us. For all the kings of the Amorites who dwell in the mountains have gathered together against us. So here's their cry to Joshua. Help us. Isn't that our salvation quest from the Lord? Right? We didn't. Let's face it. You know, I didn't know how to pray. I remember sitting in my bedroom. My sister had witnessed to me and had shared the gospel with me. And I had come to my end. And I remember sitting in my bedroom saying, Lord, I want more of you. And I didn't really know what that meant exactly. But to accept Him, we see our cry is so simple, isn't it? And He's so gracious, as we sung, you know, that He is so gracious, right? Help us. Help us. It's a perfect picture of Christ in the church. He doesn't want any religiosity, right? He doesn't want us to have to go through all these stuff, all this religion in order to finally get to a place of perfection that He accepts. What nonsense. Right? He just says, help us. And in this case, they cried out to Joshua, help us. And for certain, they were entrusting in their... That was a reminder to shut my phone off, huh? They for certain were entrusting their lives into Joshua's hands. Just as when we said, Lord, help the sinner, right? We said, Lord, you know, here you are. Here's my life. I entrust my life into your hands. And that's exactly what they were doing. Also, it was a test of faithfulness of Joshua, right? Didn't he just make a treaty? Was it a bad treaty? It probably wasn't the right treaty to make. But like we talked last time, he was upholding it. He was upholding it, whether it was a good treaty or not good treaty. We shook hands on it, and I'm keeping that treaty, right? And it goes to show us, from that standpoint, when we make an agreement with somebody, we follow it through. Whether halfway through the process we find out it's a bad treaty for us, we still keep it. Why? Integrity. Integrity. And you know, that's... So when we look at Joshua, we say, well, Joshua, are you going to be faithful to these people that you made a treaty to? Because let's face it, here's his chance to get out of the treaty. The kings of the Amorites are going to go into this city and they're going to annihilate them. No more treaty. Done. I'm out of it. Hey, I did my part. But see, Joshua is much more faithful. Right? I mean, think about it. Who's got the better deal, us or Jesus? We've got the better deal. That's the way I look at it. He gets this guy. He's definitely, you know, doesn't have the best deal going. I have the best deal. I get eternal life. Right? But just because God has said, you know what, I sent my Son to the cross so that He would die on the cross for you sinners. And even though we're not worth it, He still keeps that agreement. He still keeps that agreement. He's faithful. Amen. So when we entrust our lives to the hand of the Lord, the response is that He keeps his end of the bargain. Right? He helps us. Verse 7, so Joshua ascended from Gilgal. Gilgal is a very important place, right? This is Gilgal. Remember what Gilgal was, right? Gilgal is where the children of Israel crossed the Jordan. And there was a certain, we saw the faith of Israel. We saw their commitment to the Lord and their, and we saw them seek after God's fellowship. Right? So a very important place, Gilgal. So Joshua ascended from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. So they held up their vows to the Gibeonites. They could have just let it go and conveniently dispelled them through just allowing Adonai and Zedek and the other kings to just dismantle them. But he didn't. He didn't. I mean, basically, if you look at what he agreed to, was he agreed to allow them to stay. He didn't really agree that he was going to go ahead and just save them from everything, right? But it's a letter of the law versus a spirit of the law. He was only obligated not to kill them. And you know, that's the obligation of the Lord too, is not to kill us, but because of our sin. Because the price was paid on Calvary, right? But he does so much more for us, doesn't he? Does so much more for us. Verse 8, and the Lord said to Joshua, do not fear them, for I have delivered them into your hand. Not a man of them shall stand before you. So there's two things here. There's a command, and then God follows that up with the promise. The command here is do not fear. Do not fear them. That's the command. God doesn't want us to fear the enemy. Right? Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, right? He doesn't want us to fear the enemy. Then he follows it up with the promise, for I have delivered them into your hands. The promise being that he delivered them. That he's already gone ahead. Look how that's worded there. I have delivered. Done deal. Before it even happens, God said he had done it. It's very similar to when he brought him into the promised land, right? Just before that, you know, way back in Abraham's time, he said he's going to give it to him, the land, right? It was a done deal. Gee, I even silenced it and it still buzzes. And it comes up on my thing here. I don't know how that works exactly. It comes across my iPad, but I'm like, how does that? Well, I never set that up. It automatically does it, huh? But yeah, so he promises, meaning that God's going to do this thing. And if we look at fear, fear can paralyze us, right? Not wanting to step out with a fear of failure, you know. Gee, what if I get rejected by this person, you know? Have you ever thought, why don't I witness to this person? And most of the time, the reason why you don't witness to a particular person is that you fear something. You fear that perhaps they might reject you in your friendship. So what we're saying is that your friendship with them is more important than your obedience to God. That's what we're really saying. But we all do it, right? I mean, we've all succumbed to it. I can say for myself, I've done it before, right? So it can paralyze us and it can hold us back. So it's important that we don't fear. You know, and Joshua certainly is a man that we can look toward and say he didn't fear, even though when Jesus went to the cross, he didn't fear the cross. Right? If he had, he would have succumbed to those that were in power at that time and had, you know, given in to it. But there was no fear. There was no fear there. Easy said than done, right? Joshua, verse 9, Joshua therefore came upon them suddenly, having marched all night from Gilgal. See, he didn't wait for morning. He just went out. He marched from Gilgal all the way to Gibeon. They say that he had to climb 3,300 feet, and a distance that they marched was about 20 miles, taking 8 to 10 hours of hard marching when they were climbing up to Gibeon. It was a step of faith, right? He believed that God would deliver them. And the other thing is, I think, is that he didn't want to miss out on partnering with God, right? He didn't want to miss out on the opportunities that God would give him there. Victory, right? He would have missed out on victory with these enemies of God. Verse 10. So the Lord routed them before Israel. I like that. He routed them. Before Israel, killed them with a great slaughter at Gibeon, chasing them along the road that goes to Beth Horon, and struck them down as far as Azekah and Makeda, I don't know, something like that. And it happened as they fled before Israel and were on the descent from Beth Horon that the Lord casted down large hailstones from heaven on them as far as Azekah, and they died. And there were more who died from the hailstones than the children of Israel killed with the sword. And Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, Sun, stand still over Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Ajalon. So the sun stood still and the moon stopped till the people had revenge upon their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven and did not hasten to come down for about a whole day. And there has been no day like that before it or after it. And the Lord heeded the voice of man, for the Lord fought for Israel. Then Joshua returned, and all Israel with him, to the camp of Gilgal. So, here God fights on their behalf. He includes Israel in on this. They had a part in this. What we can't forget is that it was a privilege. It was a privilege that God would even allow them, right? Just as it is for us today, right? Why does God allow us, right? Because we can probably make a list, each one of us, how unfaithful we are, right, to Him. How you've blown it several times. Yet He uses us. It's a privilege, right? It's not something we earned. It's a privilege. Did He need Israel to defeat this army or this battle? He didn't need them. But He used them. It was a privilege. It says the hailstones were directed toward the enemy there by the Lord. Matter of fact, it said there was more people killed by hailstones than by Israel themselves. And then Joshua would boldly ask God for a specific miracle that had to be supernatural, right? The sun stands still, and the moon stop. And there's many speculations, right, how this happened. It could have been a slowing of the earth's rotation. It could have been the tilting of the earth's axis. It could have been a miracle of the reflection of light off the moon. It could have been simply the presence of God manifested in it all. But whatever it was, God did it. I don't know what it was, right? We won't know until we get there. How did you do that, Lord? That's one of your questions you want to ask. We don't know. It was supernatural, right? Something that God did. Why did Joshua ask for such a miracle? I think he asked it because he wanted an opportunity to serve the Lord in this. And his desire was that there would be victory. And he wanted the day extended in order that that might happen. And, you know, as I think about this, I sometimes I think about, Lord, you know that person we've prayed for years, that brother, that sister, the ones that don't know you. Lord, can you just stop the sun for a little while? Because, you know, he's coming back soon. Lord, could you just hold off for just a while? Just so that, you know, in our selfishness, in a sense, we want the Lord to return today, right? Actually, yesterday. But in the same token, boy, there's so many that we would like to pluck from the fire, right? So in a sense, you ask the Lord in the same thing, Lord, would you do this? You know, would you extend the days? And our response is, because, Lord, I want to be faithful to you, and I want to serve you in that way, and I want to witness to that person. I want the opportunity, Lord. Have you ever asked the Lord for opportunity? Lord, I want opportunity with that person. You know what he does? He gives it to you. I would say, every time I've ever asked, Lord, you know, can you give me opportunity with a person? He always sets it up. I don't have to manipulate it. I don't have to find the right time. Nothing. He just does it. Which is sweet, right? Because that makes our hands come off it, and we know it's all of the Lord. And then when we get done, and we've said what we had to say because the Lord put the words in our mouth, we're very satisfied. And we're thankful that He gave us that opportunity. right? All right, verse 16. We're going to go a while here, I think, first through verse 27. But these five kings had fled and hid themselves in the cave at Makkedah, and it was told Joshua, saying, "The five kings have been found hidden in the cave at Makkedah." So Joshua said, "Roll large stones against the mouth of the cage and set men by it to guard them. And do not stay there yourself, but pursue your enemy and attack their rear guard. Do not allow them to enter their cities, for the Lord your God has delivered them into your hand." Then it happened when Joshua and the children of Israel made an end of slaying them with a very great slaughter till they had finished, that those who escaped entered fortified cities. And all the people returned to the camp to Joshua to Makkedah in peace. No one moved his tongue against any of the children of Israel. And Joshua said, "Open the mouth of the cave and bring out those five kings to me from the cave." And they did so and brought out those five kings to him from the cave, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon. So it was when they had brought out those kings to Joshua that Joshua called all the men of Israel and said to the captains of the men of war who went with him, "Come near, put your feet on the necks of these kings." And they drew near and put their feet on the necks of their king. I was just thinking, boy, if Isaiah put his feet on these kings, it would wipe them out right away. Poor Isaiah. And they drew near and put their feet on their necks. Then Joshua said to them, "Do not be afraid. Be of good courage, for thus the Lord will do to all the enemies against whom you fight." See, Joshua needed to hear this, I think. He needed to hear, "Be strong and of good courage," right? Just as he did earlier when he was taking over for Moses, he needed to hear it now. And afterwards, Joshua struck them and killed them and hanged them on five trees. And they were hanged on the trees until evening. So it was at the time of the going down of the sun that Joshua commanded, and they took them down from the tree, cast them into the cave where they had been hidden, and laid a large stone against the cave's mouth, which remains until this very day. So, the capture of the kings in the cave, Joshua specifically says, "I want you to roll a stone against the mouth of the cage. I want you to set men on it, but I don't want you to be them men." Because they had war to do. They had battle to do, right? And Joshua wasn't going to tend to this, to these kings, until after all the rest of the battle had been won. Because he didn't want distraction in the camp. He didn't want to, all of a sudden, how many times have you seen that in history where they go after the leader and all the rest of the troops actually win the battle. So he didn't want it. He wanted to finish the battle and then go take care of the kings. It says in verse 21 that no one moved his tongue against the children of Israel, meaning that there is a recognition that God was with Israel, even the nations that the other nations could see that. right? Just as we discussed before. And the question is, I guess, is the church that way as well, where people look at the church and say, wow, their God is with them. You know, does people look at our church and say, God is with them? And is it convincing as they keep coming? And, you know, would it convince them that they would want to follow Jesus, you know? So Joshua goes ahead and he executes the king, or the kings. Really, what he was doing was saying, look, there's no place for the enemy in our camp. Right? I mean, the same thing goes for us, right? We should not never harbor any enemies of the Lord. Whether spiritual thoughts, false motives, all that stuff, you know, we shouldn't harbor those things within us. Right? That our vessel, our, you know, I think it was, Keith said it well, that we are God's temple, right? We are God's tabernacle. When we read the responsive reading this week on 69, I think it was 96, it mentioned the tabernacle of God. We are God's tabernacle, and it all belongs to Jesus. And we wouldn't want any part of any enemy within us, right? And then, of course, in verse 29 there, he reminds Joshua that he would give them victory over the enemies. But he does say right at the end, he says, for thus the Lord will do to all your enemies against whom you fight. It gives us something to do there. Gives Joshua something to do. He had to fight in order for God to give victory. That was the precursor here, that Joshua, if you're obedient and you fight, I'm going to give you victory. If you're lazy, forget the victory. You're not going to get victory. And I think sometimes our mouth runs and our actions are none. Right? We say a lot. We say we're going to do this, we're going to do that. We never fight in the battle. We never fight in the battle. And God doesn't really reward that, right? So God says, if you're truly going to fight, I will give you the victory. And I think, you know, as I was looking at this, what's one battle that people say they desire to do and they don't do? And that's pray. Right? How many times, you know, I was listening, I think it was Chip Ingram this week, and he was talking about prayer and how he wants to pray. He was confessing, basically, I want to pray more, but I don't. You know? And, you know, some of these people, man, they pray their socks off, you know, and we don't even know them. They're not on the radio. God knows them because they're fighting a battle. They're in the battle, in the midst of the battle, you know, the spiritual battle. But it challenges me anyways to really to battle on my knees more than I do, for sure. And I think we need to. You know, I was last week when we sat here and just prayed, it was awesome. You know, I needed it. Personally, I just needed to pray. You know, of course I need to pray all the time, but I recognized it, I guess, last week that I need to pray. And I just think it's a good place for us to be, you know. And I think we're going to do that once a month, you know. Maybe the first, you know, I was thinking, why not do it every first Wednesday of the month? Every first Sunday of the month, we take communion. Why don't we do a prayer session every first week of every month, you know? Just for us to sit in here and pray together, you know? I think it would be healthy for us.